Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
I don't remember the last time we did a podcast together. It's almost like some giant world enslaving thing has happened that's fractured us apart across the country.
You know the beginning bit of Inception when he walks into the room and he's an old man? That's exactly what's happened. We've finally gone enough layers deep where you guys have come washed up on my beach and I'm just like, hello, I'm in Wales now.
I feel like we're very much the old people and Josh is the very young, spry-looking dude on the other side of the table.
Oh, he's Leo. He is definitely trying to,
Yeah. Big
not
Leo.
Not anymore, dude. Not after the past 4, 5, 6 months. I feel like I've aged 10
that's
years.
That's a good way of putting it. Like, we all feel like we're on sort of like level 3 of the dream level, and we're trying to get back to whatever the ground level is. But yeah, I just thought we'd do a conversation, a podcast about the general state of exclusives, and the conversation that Phil Spencer sort of sparked a good few weeks ago, where he was talking about the idea of exclusive games being exclusive to certain platforms, how that is fundamentally anti-consumer. He sort of talked about the idea of, you know, in some ways it's always going to restrict somebody from playing something, and if you sort of value the art form, the medium of gaming overall, then at some point exclusives are going to have to go away. The weird addendum to that is that he's still championing, you know, this Xbox family of consoles, and obviously they're not about to put Halo on the PS4. And he was sort of talking about, hey, you know, we don't believe in console exclusives, but what he really meant was that things can go to PC as well. He's still not really talking about it as an art form thing.
You have to look at it as well, that is definitely the type of attitude that somebody who has lost the previous console war would say. Like, when they basically just go like, hey, look, listen, exclusives, they're not everything. It's like the person who's only got, what was it, 12 exclusives for the Xbox One?
Oh, it's like 3 now? I mean, everything else has come across.
The PS4 absolutely dominated in that sense. The Switch obviously has like loads of their own, and the PC, well, I mean, God, look at them, the amount that they've got there. Like, exclusivity will always exist, and if anything, I don't see why you would want to get rid of it. Like, because you say, like, the IPs, why would you want to give them to somebody else? Like, yes, you could sell more for that one franchise, but it's not a guarantee that it's going to be, that people are going to buy your console. You want them to play it on your hardware, surely. This only benefits the publisher.
The thing that you said before as well about, like, they've almost had to pivot, and it's so strange because they've had so long to come up with this like genius game plan to tackle the next generation. I still want to believe that they have some aces up their sleeve and whatever, but considering how much of a misstep the Xbox One was and the reveal around it, and they sacked Don Matrick and brought Phil in, and Game Pass is great, and you make all these really cool strides towards this like, sort of more positive energy around the Xbox, and then it's just they've almost had to pivot and accept that sort of quote-unquote losing mentality because they can't compete with the PS5's exclusives or the PS4 as well. And I just thought that after this long, that's what they would directly go up against. But their approach now has just been to, oh, well, actually, we don't need exclusives. Everything's fine. You know, everything's for everybody. And we're just going to sort of, as long as you're playing on something that's Microsoft branded, we don't really care.
But that's something that's Microsoft branded. Like, why would you choose that one over... Mm. Like, if you're a PS4 fanboy, and like Josh, you've had PS stuff since PS2, PS1?
Yes, but I was Xbox 360 was like a big conversion for me. Like, the original Xbox was when I kind of started looking to the other side, and then for that, the generation that came after, I was Xbox 360 all the way, and then the Xbox One dropped the ball so hard that I came back home, as it were, to my original love for the PlayStation.
But if somebody said to you that, okay, so Josh, there's this game is coming out for all platforms, how do you decide? What is the deciding factor for you to decide which platform to play it on?
It's a bunch of different things. Like on the surface, it depends which game runs better. You know what I mean? Like if I had a PlayStation 3 and an Xbox 360, there was no chance I was going to buy Skyrim for PlayStation 3 because it ran like arse. So that's like a big consideration. But as we get more parity between the consoles, it's more kind of like where your friends are, what's the most comfortable to play. Like my PlayStation 4 Pro now is set up, so that's awfully convenient. That's where most of my friends are that I play with. So that's kind of like my main entertainment system as well. Like I watch YouTube, Netflix and stuff through that console. So it's actually kind of an effort to get the Xbox out because currently it's unplugged for the PlayStation VR. So I would need to unplug that, plug the Xbox in to play a multi-platform game. Like I'm just not going to do that. I would to play, you know, Gears 5. I would dust the old thing off and like really enjoy my time. Halo Infinite, I probably would. But it's just kind of like, I feel when it comes to multi-platform stuff, you just, you usually pick a side and you go with it. I have owned, you know, both the consoles for 6 years now, and I've never gone to Xbox for a multi-plat game unless there was like a severe price drop or I had one specific friend who wanted to play on that console.
Is that because of the controller and stuff, though? Like, is that because I tend to favor PS4 as well until I went slightly mad on Black Friday and got Xbox One X. And then I was like, oh, well, clearly it's going to be better on the Xbox. So I did that.
Not going to lie, though, the Xbox One controller is the best controller.
You've said this for years, and it's always been crazy.
The Xbox One controller. I've got one right here, actually. There you go. Yeah. It's
all the clicky, clacky D-pad.
It is a marvelous piece of design, this. It's just so, it's so robust. I absolutely love it. If it was like a choice to allow me to play the Xbox, the PS4 using the Xbox One controller, I totally would.
Oh, Josh, where are you on this divide?
Right in the middle. On the one hand, it's incredibly ergonomically satisfying to hold and play. So that's one point of Jules. On the other hand, it is clicky-clacky. And why does it sound like it's just... You know, nails on a chalkboard.
Don't need the D-pad to click on at all.
Be smooth
all the way. I'll go on, Jules.
I was going to say that that's actually probably the way to win the next sort of console wars is just by offering cross-platform play. Like if Microsoft had just gone ahead and just said like every game that we're going to be putting out, while we might not have exclusives, is going to be cross-platform between this and PC, every single game, I'd be on that like a heartbeat. Because like Josh was saying before, I have more friendship groups that intersect in the Venn diagram of my life by having those two criteria met of Xbox fans and PC fans. If they did that, then I'd probably put everything onto the Xbox because of the fact that it would just be there. But
I think it is like, because he is right. Obviously, you know, you are going to be restricting a portion of a consumer base that can't access your console. But for me, that's the race that you're in. Like, that's the media you're in. Like, nearly any sort of competition thing comes down to two contenders, whether it's, you know, Sega versus Nintendo or Android versus iPhone or whatever. And, you know, for the most part, for this generation, until the Switch came along, it was obviously Sony versus Microsoft, even though Sony was so far ahead. For me, I just view exclusives as a fundamental part of the industry. It's just something that we need to stoke your interest in a new system. And the amount of conversations going around this Series X just being like, well, why would I buy this? Because it's always going to come down to the games. Now, maybe that is a reframing of the mentality around gaming, that like we just need to accept that on a long enough timeline, it's going to be like film, TV, books, where you can just access them digitally everywhere. I don't know. I'm not holding on to something that's too old at this point.
Even that though, like you compare it to like film and TV, for instance, even those kind of mediums have their own versions of Sony and Microsoft that have their own exclusives. You know what I mean? Like you go to Netflix primarily for Netflix originals, you go to Amazon Prime, they have Amazon Prime originals. And I feel like there are two different conversations kind of happening here, and that's between the first party or I guess second party exclusives and then kind of like the more third party deals where you get something like a Rise of the Tomb Raider was the second one. You get a Rise of the Tomb Raider deal where you get a series that was predominantly, you know, or the previous game was multi-platform. It came out on all consoles. And then suddenly the sequel is an Xbox One exclusive, at least for launch it was. And the messaging was kind of unclear. Is it going to be timed? How long is it going to be timed for? And that's when people get really pissed off. And that's when you get this kind of anti-consumer kind of thread coming in, because inherently that kind of is. That isn't bringing anything new to the table. It's, if anything, it's gating off a community that's already invested in this brand, in this franchise, and you are saying, no, you have to come over here. Whereas when it comes to first party, I think you're right there, Scott, where like competition breeds, you know, innovation.
I've stuff. Literally got that written down. I could not remember what the quote was. So I wrote competition breeds innovation slash excellence. It's one of the two.
It does, though. You know, complacency just like kills companies. You look at, you know, the EA Sports series, you know, they've got the exclusive license to these teams, these leagues and stuff like that. And you get these games that are incredibly similar because they have nothing really left to fight for. They're not going up against another behemoth. Whereas you've got Microsoft, you've got Sony with their first-party studios, you've got Halo, you've got Uncharted, you've got some other Xbox franchise, you've got Gears, you've got Horizon Zero Dawn or something. And they fundamentally push those respective console makers and publishers and developers to try and do something new, to try and one-up in each other, to try and kind of... you know, get the market share of profits and fans and kind of engagement and stuff like that. And I don't think that's inherently anti-consumer, because the opposite of that is everything's on everywhere and no one tries to vie for your attention. So we get, you know, diminishing returns and games that just aren't trying to push forward because they have no reason to try and push forward because they're not fighting for anything other than just trying to get people to buy the game.
Mm-hmm. I feel like Phil's statement as well is kind of like dismisses of the success of exclusives in terms of the monetary return that they get. Like if you look at the PS4 Spider-Man, that sold so many units. The God of War game sold so many units. Like there is a reason for them to exist because of the fact that you can... Yes, you are gating off some of the market, but they are selling so well that why would you ever not want to have exclusives? Like, you're basically going up to Sony and saying, please, can you let stop this war of having exclusives? Why would they ever turn around and say no? Like, why would they
That's what I think he's trying to... That's the thing. It's like, is it a marketing spin? Like, you know, is it this sort of game of 4D PR chess? Or is it like a more progressive mentality towards the availability of games in the long run? But for me, I like all that stuff. Like, I was going to say, what are you guys' thoughts on all the console war stuff? Because obviously we came up when, you know, during like N64 versus PS1 and like PS2 like obliterated the GameCube and all that kind of crap. And I love that stuff in like a fun, self-aware sports team kind of way. Never going online harassing developers or whatever.
No.
Because obviously some people take it too far, but I think like that stuff for me is part of the enjoyment of the medium, and like that whole thing of like, oh, what's my team gonna have, or like, oh, what's this first party studio working on, and like, oh, you know, I'm proud to, or like, I'm happy, I'm looking forward to seeing what like all of this money's gonna get put behind from a company that wants to have a portfolio of titles. For me, that's some of the most exciting stuff of why gaming is a big deal and why I like favor it as a medium. But I mean, what's like either of your thoughts on like the console war stuff in general? Like, are exclusives necessary in that sort of realm as well?
I don't want to ever look out to the gaming industry and just see that it's become a homogenous mess where you can get every title on every console, because again, what's the point? You might as well just have one console then. You might as well have like just one developer.
Well, that's clearly what they want eventually, yeah.
Yeah, but that's just so boring. Like, it's I definitely think that having exclusives is important because it makes you feel proud to own certain consoles. It's a very, very elitist thing to say that you could just get all of the consoles to therefore mitigate this, which is a huge expense. And I'm not recommending that to people. But
I do that over time, but it's like 10 years.
We're all in, like, Josh, how old are you again? You're 22?
25.
That's how long we've been in lockdown.
So when you hit 30s, you'll be able to have any console you want, mate. That's just what happens, because you've accrued them over the years. You get gifted them. Yeah. So by that point, like, I'm 33 now. I'm looking around just going like, oh, I can play whatever I want on any console because over the years I've just scrounged and scrimped. But it's kind of sad in a way as well, because I don't feel like I've got an allegiance to any particular one. I liked having when I was a kid.
That's the thing, because obviously when you're coming up, like, it forms part of your identity as a person when you're scrambling to latch onto anything through music or games or whatever when you're younger. And I think that obviously that leads to those toxic mentalities of like, oh my God, like, you know, this thing got slagged off, therefore I'm going to take it personally and go online and slag someone else off. As opposed to when you get older and it's a more mature, like I said, it's almost sports-like mentality of just sort of general, like, supporting a brand or being happy to see like a portfolio of first party stuff.
That changed the day that the developers themselves started reaching out to other developers of other exclusives and saying, well done. That was the moment where people were just kind of like, oh, okay, that's it. There is no reason to fight or have a go at somebody for choosing or liking something. You can like whatever you like.
And
it was like, because Corey Balrog's just a lovely person. He's always offering out praise to people who are doing well in the industry. And I love to see that, because that's how you grow.
Yeah, it's like shaking hands or like the bow at the end of the UFC bout. It's just sort of like, yeah, good game. Like we both understood the rules. We've both had a go and you won this one and I'll get you next time and whatever. Yeah. Like, at least that's how I kind of view it. Josh, what's your thoughts on all the console war stuff over the years?
I mean, yeah, it is. It's just nice to care about something, isn't it? Like, there are obviously levels to this, but it's
in 2020,
you go through your life being kind of apathetic or not investing in stuff because it's not a very nice or healthy way to live. But obviously, you know, there are extents. You don't want to take that too far. You don't want it to become toxic. You don't want it to become a case of an in-group and an out-group and an us versus them. And I do feel like the video game industry itself is to blame for cultivating that to an extent. It's not like it's just people. You know, they are being told either indirectly or directly to side with us and, you know, don't side with them. Come to us, you know, make your identity ingrained with our brand. And that stuff is horrible and toxic, but there is a certain level of it that I find, you know, is quite helpful and quite nice to be part of a community. Obviously, you know, there are a lot of pros that come with that. And yeah, well, like when you're grown up, like even now, you know, since starting this job where we have to like cover both sides, we have a lot more consoles, we have to be more objective with how we think. Like you do lose that element of kind of, you know, secretly hoping Microsoft has some kind of winner in its up its sleeve or you want to Sony to kind of come back. Like there's still elements of that, but at least for me personally, it's way less pronounced than it once was.
It's that's a really like cool way of putting it, because I think I still love that, where I'm just sort of like, oh, what are they gonna do next? Like, it's like an ongoing saga. It's like, well, PS5 showcase is like, well, they've got Ratchet and Clank and the Spider-Man, Miles Morales, and they've got all these other things. I'm like, oh, what's Xbox gonna do next? And we, you know, we did like videos on that stuff of like, oh, how can Xbox possibly respond to this thing? And then they didn't. They sort of squandered it. They did Halo, and it's got Craig in, and I'm loving Craig. I like him more than what Halo Infinite looks like. And I'm like, oh, that's like a really weird report to that sort of hand that you were dealt. And like, I'm like, okay, what are they going to do next? Like, it's all to play for. And like I said, it's I almost have a sports analogy to it.
Well, that's perfect. Like, don't get me wrong, I still love getting caught up in the drama. Like, I wouldn't be as excited to do these videos if I didn't, you know, love the industry and love the machinations of it and seeing these hands get played and, you know, these companies try to one-up on each other. I'm more talking about, like, you know, using the sports team analogy. Like, growing up, you make kind of like a football team part of your identity to the point where you hate the other people. And I feel like growing up and, you know, doing what we do, we can sort of appreciate it from a kind of a further step back where we take ourselves out of the equation. We might still be excited, but we're not, like, going to feel bummed out about ourselves if PlayStation doesn't show up one day. We can get excited for what they're doing, but we're not going to be like, man, I feel totally let down, like, for me as a person, you know what I mean? I feel like this has affected me and affected my mood and affected how I see, you know, these games and this industry and these people, which is the toxic thing, really.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And, like, obviously that's that. Again, for one last sort of sports thing, that's like, oh, your football team lost, therefore your entire holiday is ruined or your entire weekend is ruined or whatever. Like, that sort of, like, moving past external forces stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's just that general idea of, like, because I guess we didn't actually answer the question directly. Are exclusives fundamentally anti-consumer? Yes, they are. But I think that's for the betterment of the medium. But I don't know if you would still say the same thing, Jules.
Definitely. I know it sounds like a weird thing to say, like, yes, they're bad for the people who can't
like get for the them, medium
but they're better for the industry overall, because without exclusives we would end up with just slop, because no one would try. No one would care. You just go for the lowest common denominator with the maximum possible return. It doesn't promote innovation. Studios are given more leeway, creative freedom on their part as well to try these new things in the first place. That would go if we didn't have exclusive. If everything was open borders, then there would just be people abusing the system and putting trite out.
It makes me curious about, like, because, like, obviously there's the whole thing about, like, Xbox becoming like the Netflix of games, and like Netflix themselves struggled a lot with their originals. Like, I think only the last sort of, I don't know, yeah, a couple of years, time's a flat circle, it's lockdown. But I think they've started getting better with their originals now. But stuff like when they did that Cloverfield weird movie thing, and it was like Paradox, the vast majority. Yeah. Yeah, the Paradox thing. And like the vast majority of Netflix originals at the beginning felt really throwaway. And every time you would Google one, it was like a 4 out of 10 thing. And they've not nailed every part of it, but I feel like they're a little bit better now. Things like Buster Scruggs or whatever. And it's just that general idea of like, well, how do you, if games are available to everybody at once, then where does that innovation come from? Assumedly, it would have to be for the love of the medium. Like Netflix wanted to start greenlighting better projects or something like that. But I just don't know, like, on a long enough timeline, do you see gaming going this way anyway? Because films, TV, books, everything's become this access an app on your TV thing, as opposed to being kind of a smaller industry like it is now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I think we'll see, like, eventually we will see, you know, publishers and console makers doing away with the idea of just having one console, and instead we'll have a platform. You know, like you were saying there, like Phil Spencer and Xbox, they're already moving towards that with PC and all their different Xbox consoles. Like the Xbox, just Xbox, just Microsoft is kind of its own brand at this point. And I do feel like eventually, over a long enough time period, we will see that with Sony. But even then, I feel like all of these different companies just know the value of an exclusive brand, an exclusive IP. So while we might move away from, you know, having these real rigid generations where you can only get something at PS5 on launch that you can't get on the PlayStation 4, like now, eventually we will get it. So we have this cross-pollination, so everything's accessible, but only over one family of units. I still don't think we'll get to a point where everything's available everywhere, because I feel like brands are just too, like Jules is saying, brands are just too successful in their own right. They move services, they move platforms, they move consoles, they move software, and people, you know, ultimately want them because the gaming industry and industries at large, like we were saying as well, tie people's kind of investment to those specific brands, and you kind of like lose that. It becomes way more nebulous, way more harder to pin down, way more harder to market to if you kind of just have this cross-pollination thing. Like, I don't necessarily think they're anti-consumer. I do, when you kind of get arrogant about it, like when you have the Xbox One and you're like, if you want to play Xbox 360 games, stick with the Xbox 360 because we don't want you, essentially. Like, there's a there's a dick way to do it, but there is a kind of you know, an understanding of that we need to push technology forward. We're going to try our best to make, if you buy into the Xbox brand, it as accessible as possible to play these different titles on whatever machine you have. But at the same time, we still understand that Halo sells because it's tied to our console, and we're not going to let the competition have that just because it might get some more software sales, you know what I mean?
Like, at some point, like, I get he's going down this, like, super friendly, everything's for everyone, don't worry about it. Like, we're all going to just love games in the sun, dance around, you know, link arms, it's all fine. But there is obviously that, like, brass tacks business reality of, like, but we need, it's still going to come down to the games, it's still going to come down to the franchises, the IPs. And in that case, it isn't the same as a Netflix or like, a Prime or whatever, where, I don't know, for me, I didn't subscribe to Netflix Prime for specific shows. It was the service, which I think is what they're going for. But I just think the difference in medium changes that. Like, in gaming, the amount of time we're going to invest per game, I don't know if you guys would agree, but for me, it does come down to the games. Like, Game Pass is great, but it's still specific games that I'm highlighting.
Yeah, no, very true. Very true indeed.
Because the other thing I was going to say as well is, like, the amount of stuff that the amount of money they've invested in things like the xCloud streaming stuff, where you can just stream a game on your phone or access it anywhere. Is that a future that you guys want as well? Because that's another step towards, like, Xbox being an app that is just available everywhere, like a Netflix or something like that.
It's the concept of being able to stream anything anywhere. I think it's such a gimmick. Like, I'm
probably do as well, to be honest.
I love the idea that the Switch has popularized being able to take like a proper console on the move with you. But still, we all know that there are still limitations with that idea. And adding in the concept of streaming stuff around a country which doesn't even have good internet at the best of times. I mean, like, we're struggling to get a connection going for this chat. It boggles the mind that people think that that's going to happen in the next couple of years. The technology will be there, but the infrastructure will not be.
Do you think that if they say they do manage to get it, say the infrastructure is absolutely bang on, does the idea of playing a Halo, Fable, a Gears, whatever on a phone, is that going to get you in?
Because that will change the mentality of how developers look to program games. They will not look for long-seated, long-driven stuff. They'll go, okay, we need to develop games that are quick blasts. Like, it will work for games like Call of Duty or like a Battlefield game or something that has a round-based short system that you can drop in and drop out. But let's just say what the impact that would have for your RPGs and stuff like that. Like, do I want to start a Final Fantasy 20 game and then suddenly an hour later to go, oh, okay, I've got to put that down now and go there. Like, no, you want to be sucked into those worlds. They rely on immersion. So it won't translate well to like all these different types of games. And I worry that if they did try and get it to work on that, we'd end up with every game having like an episodic recap every time you like log back in or something like that. Did you forget what happened 20 minutes ago? No, I didn't. No,
I would take that, to be honest. That's like a separate issue, but I would totally take a game that if I boot up Skyrim now after like 9 years or whatever, I would love something that said, hey, by the way, you just did this 9 years ago.
If it was 9 years ago, then yeah, I would actually appreciate that.
Is that like a maximum time limit to it? But yeah, I don't know, Josh, what do you think of that sort of thing?
I'm again conflicted on this, man, because on the one hand, if games were continued to be made as they are to now, or like around about now, where it is just kind of like the conventional experiences, you've got conventional RPGs, you've got conventional shooters, and they ultimately play as they do on consoles, I don't think it would be like completely bad. If anything, it would be good to have access to that anyway, because like we were saying, it opens up the accessibility to so many other people. And as long as it scales, as long as you don't kind of dial back your ambition from a developing perspective, as long as you find a way to have the kind of the console experience, this is the Xbox Series X like experience with, you know, ray tracing and 120 frames per second. But you can also get a version of this that stream that you can play on your tablet or your telly or something like that. If it kind of like is paired back or something, I don't see what the issue would be fully in an ideal world where this doesn't lead to shortcuts, where this doesn't lead to kind of cut corners or a reining in of ambition. Like, if you can get that infrastructure up and you can get the technology working, why not beam it to everywhere? Like, the proof is in the practice, and I don't think the practice is going to be all that good, at least for the foreseeable future. But in an ideal world, you know, a future end goal where this would be possible and it would be more or less seamless, I feel like, why not? You know, I love the Switch. The Vita sounds really good, Scott. You know, being able to remote.
Mate, the Vita is like stupidly good. The Vita, some say, is better than the Switch, but that's only in regards to how it is as a system. One thing I was going to ask as well, in regards to all this stuff, it's like, how much do we cling on to the general ways of playing? Because it's the way that we were brought up when the medium was like in its infancy, the idea of like, you know, a controller and as opposed to a touchscreen, or sitting down with like having the TV in front of you and playing that way, as opposed to taking in something like if you played Skyrim for the first time, if someone was asking to, you know, should I play Skyrim, the version we're going to suggest is the way that we played it, where you're sitting down with a big TV and you go through it, as opposed to, and if someone's like, oh, well, I'll just get the mobile version, and it's like, well, you like, if you're still streaming Skyrim onto a phone, that's still Skyrim, but it's not the way that we would do it, and is that just as good? Like, I don't know, I think all those things will change depending on like I said screen size, accessibility, things like that, but which doesn't necessarily go hand in hand with the exclusive thing, but Microsoft are very much pushing the xCloud stuff, and that's how they've been doing hands-on with their game previews and things like that, whereas on Sony's side, PlayStation Now is just this like side thing that they've just sort of gone, well, we'll do it if you want it, but we're not really that sure. Like, Josh, you've got PlayStation Now, did they ever really make it a worthwhile, like a way better than it was when it first launched?
It's way better than it was when it first launched, primarily because they've started adding like actual PlayStation 4 exclusives to it that you can download. Every PlayStation 4 game that's on there, you don't have to stream. You can do it Xbox Game Pass style, where you can download it. It's a much better experience. But it's still quite an interesting way to go back and revisit all the games. For instance, I was doing a bunch last year where I was going back to the MGS franchise, and I played all of the HD 2, 3 and Peace Walker on there, and yeah,
Scott,
it's not
so
as good.
Proud of you.
Exactly.
I hope they hold up.
having it on, you know, having the originals or having the boxed version. But it's a way to play that I probably wouldn't have pursued had I not had that so instantly accessible to me. And I feel like, yeah, it might not be the most ideal way to experience something, but we're also seeing that in, you know, the movie or the movie world at the minute. You can go to IMAX, you can go to the cinema, you can watch something on home release on your telly, you can watch it on your laptop, you can watch it on a tablet, you can watch it on a phone, and yeah, you have all of these options, but just because you say it to someone, you can play Skyrim on a phone, that doesn't mean everyone's going to automatically go, well, that's all I'm playing.
Someone will.
That's all I'm going to do. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, the option is still open. Mm-hmm. And I feel like as long as there are still things to champion about, like, the regular console experience, then we won't see people suddenly go, well, I'm giving up on it because this is available now, so I'm going to migrate over.
I guess if anything, it'll breed that another sort of like fractured mentality of people being like, oh, did you play it? But where did you play it? Did you play it on a TV? Did you play it at home? Like, oh, you played the mobile version. Like, oh, that's not really.
Trust me, the PC gaming circle is very much like that, because it's not a case of now just like, oh, are you playing it? Because obviously we're all playing it. It's what graphics setting have you got? You get gatekeeping in terms of hardware at that point over there. So if Phil Spencer wants to talk about sort of getting exclusivity down, like, exclusivity exists even within the community in that sense, because you have, everyone's got a different console effectively trying to play the same game.
But that's another thing, is like, one of the ways to tie the streaming stuff to the exclusivity thing is that both companies are pretty much flirting with the idea of what could eventually become an Xbox app or a PlayStation app. Like, Game Pass is, you know, you put that icon on a TV and you Bluetooth tether the controller to the TV and you have Xbox as the Netflix of games. Sony tried that with the PlayStation. It was called PlayStation TV. Jules, you had it for the Persona 4. I forget what it was called. I think it's PSTV. And, you know, that's like them sort of exploring, okay, the PlayStation could just be an app going forward. But then, like you said, you take the PC side of it and everyone has these... It's almost like a filtering down diagram. It's like, well, everyone's coming from above. There's 10 different ways you could access this product, and we're all trying to get down to the one distilled experience in the middle, which for me makes me think of like mods and how different things can change what that core experience is. And I just want the exact version of whatever the product is, which also ties into something like Christopher Nolan and Tenet, and just being like, well, the only way to view this movie is in the cinema. That's the way.
Yeah.
And if you're going to watch it on a phone, that's not good enough. And all those things.
I feel like as a society, I feel like as sad as it might be, I think we're just beyond that point now. You know, even with the consoles we have, we've got PlayStation 4, we've got PlayStation 4 Pro, we've got 4K TVs, we've got TVs that aren't 4K, you've got TVs that have HDR10, you've got TVs that have HDR8. So we're already seeing...
I love the fact you just described every single one of the TVs that Scott went through that one week.
Oh my God, we're not going back to that. Even the one I've got now can barely hold an internet connection, so it's going to end up getting returned as well. Don't buy a 4K TV.
Well, this is it, you know what I mean? Like, we both played Ghost of Tsushima, but I might have played it in HDR, you might not, you know what I mean?
Like, or Ori and the Will of the Wisps, yeah.
The experiences are always going to be slightly different, but I don't feel like currently we have much gatekeeping going on in that sense. Like, yes, like PC, completely different ecosystem, completely different beast, but in a kind of more casual console market, that where TV specs can be so confusing and the differences between the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 4 regular mode and boost mode can be so confusing, I don't think we're quite there yet. And ultimately it just leads to like a bunch of different variations, very slight variations on what's essentially the same game. Like, you don't lose anything substantial. Like, I'm not going to rate Ghost of Tsushima a 7 out of 10 because I didn't play it in HDR, because I played it on like a smaller screen, you know what I mean? Or I played it on a base console. Like, the core experience ultimately, I think anyway, will remain the same across the board. And the people who buy in at the top level will have a few extra bells and whistles. The people at the bottom level won't have them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Tsushima is an interesting example because that game is so gorgeous and it relies so much, like, the photo mode elevates a lot of the overall visuals and the feeling of being in this sort of majestic, like, storybook version of Japan. So I think, like, that's one thing that you wouldn't get if you were on a smaller screen. But yeah, in terms of like access points and exclusives and things like that, like, to round it all out, I would say that every company going forward, if you're going to compete in this space at this level, you do need to have a portfolio of titles that will turn heads, which Sony have very much got that. PS4 exclusive library is the best in PlayStation history by a pretty considerable margin, which is kind of insane considering they were going up against like Metal Gear and Final Fantasy 7 and things like that back on the PS1 days. But yeah, I guess like conclusive thoughts, are you guys pretty much on the same page?
Yeah, definitely. Keep the exclusives coming. Like, I can't champion them enough, just because without them, we wouldn't have gotten some of the craziest ideas. Because if you think about it this way, if you've got an idea and you're going to one of the big companies and they say, right, it's got to be available on all platform, you then have to adhere to loads of different things. You have to make it more homogenous to make sure that it recoups back the money that they're going to invest in, making sure that it's multi-platform. There's mm-hmm. so many different things about getting architecture to work, support and bug patching and things like that as well. It's just almost easier to work with just one company. I've heard that Sony aren't exactly like the most flexible when it comes to some of their sort of things that they put out, but still, I imagine that the creative freedom you get to make game a reality.
That's another thing too, is like, the if you're working with one specific company like a Sony, then they might not want to put their name on something that's a bit more like risque. Like, it's not like Nintendo have done any adult focused games. The nearest is like Bayonetta or something like that.
They did Mad World.
I was thinking of Mad World, but even that's like a big gory over the top thing, like in a comic book kind of way. They've not done like Last of Us 2, something that adjacent, just barely going to be like a Nintendo fronted version of that, just isn't going to exist because their brand mentality is so much more rounded, family friendly, yeah. and all ages. So I think there's like pros and cons in that way, but they're still building a portfolio that is very much Nintendo, and that's what you go for. Josh, what's your final thoughts?
Totally. Like, I feel when it comes to, you know, some of my favorite games of the generation, both across all of these different consoles, whether it's Nintendo, Xbox, or PlayStation 4, a lot of them will be exclusives. You know, Breath of the Wild, you know, The Last of Us, Gears 5, I bloody loved, Cuphead, which was exclusive for a long time. You know what I mean? Like, I look to these games, and none of these companies are perfect. You know what I mean? None of these publishers are perfect or are the most ethical, but with this kind of system that's in place now, I feel like we do get more diverse games than we would otherwise. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When everyone was saying that single player games were dead, EA was saying live services is the future. You had Sony saying, well, no, we're going to make God of War. We're going to make Spider-Man. We're going to make The Last of Us. We're going to make Horizon Zero Dawn. And we're going to fill a gap in the market that would be totally ignored otherwise. And mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, Xbox does that as well. And all of them do. And I feel like without that, you're left off with, like Jules said, a more homogenous kind of landscape of grey, dry bread, I suppose.
My thing is, if you compare it to like the streaming services, like the exclusives are like the tip of the spear, the thing that might get you in, the thing that they can front load on a storefront. But you are getting a catalog of stuff alongside that. Whereas if it's just the catalog and hardly any exclusives, then it's something like Disney Plus, where you sort of get it for a body of stuff, but it doesn't keep you. It's like Disney Plus is fine, but it's nowhere near as exciting as something like a Netflix or like something that you would buy like a Prime to access a certain title. The conversation continues, but let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're watching the video version, or come find us on Twitter if you're following along on the audio platforms. For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Jules Gill.
Thanks for having me.
And Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
I will catch you next time. Bye.
See ya.
Peace.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that.
Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.